The first reading is Psalm 119, verses 1 to 8. Blessed are they whose ways are blameless, who walk according to the law of the Lord. Blessed are they who keep his statutes and seek him with all their heart. They do nothing wrong. They walk in his ways. You have laid down precepts that are to be fully obeyed. Oh, that my ways were steadfast in obeying your decrees. Then I would not be put to shame when I consider all your commands. I will praise you with an upright heart as I learn your righteous laws. I will obey your decrees. Do not utterly forsake me. This is the word of the Lord.
Please do sit down as we come to our second reading, after which I will speak on that passage.
The second reading is from Matthew chapter 5, starting at verse 21. It can be found on page 969 in your pew Bibles. You have heard it said to the people long ago, "Do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you, anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, 'Raca,' is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, 'You fool,' will be in danger of fire and hell. Therefore, if you are offering that gift at the altar, and there, remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary, who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still with him on the way, or he may hand over to you to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you will not get on out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, 'Do not commit adultery.' But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than the whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than the whole body go into hell. As it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you, anyone who divorces his wife, except for marital unfaithfulness, causes her to become an adulteress. And anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard it said to the people long ago, 'Do not break your oath, but keep the oath you have made to the Lord.' But I tell you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. Simply your yes be yes, and your no, no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one." This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you.
Before we do, let me pray. Heavenly Father, as we come to study your word together, May I speak not the notes that are in front of me, but the words that you want this congregation, these people here this morning, to hear. Open my mouth and your, and their, and all our ears to hear and receive your holy word. Amen. Many years ago, more years than I'm going to admit, one of my management chiefs said you should never apologise, because if you have to apologise for what you're about to do, you shouldn't be doing it. Well, I'm about to break that, because I am going to apologise, because Mark phoned me last week as I was driving. I was actually driving at Glynde in Suffolk, and the road I was on a good bit had a very poor mobile signal, and on the rest of it the call kept dropping out. So it wasn't until Thursday morning that we spoke to each other, just as I was going out to a breakfast meeting. So you'll understand, I haven't had a great deal of time to study and write a sermon. So I'm actually cribbing Jeremy's notes. I've never before used another man's sermon notes. So I trust and pray that I will make the best job of it. They make a lot of sense to me, and I hope that I will make sense of them to you. And I certainly have no disagreement with anything that he's saying. Murder, adultery, divorce, and oaths. They're the headings in the NIV. I'm not actually a great fan of the headings in the NIV. Matthew didn't write them, so why should our Bible editors think they can do that? And I often find them not very helpful. But those are the headings. And as the chapter moves on, there is a link between these subjects, and that appears in more fully in what we call the Sermon on the Mount. And we have a similar issue with all of them. Outward actions and inward attitudes and thoughts. What's legalism and what's love? What's inner commitment? And that's part of the issue we're looking at. It's not primarily about the interpretation or whether it's right or wrong, though sayings begin with what's been taught by others. It's about it's not about what's been said. It's understanding what Jesus wants of us. Verse 17 says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." So what does "to fulfill them" mean? It means to complete them. The Greek word, and you probably realise that our New Testament was originally written in Greek, it has the meaning of completion. It's the same word Jesus used for his final words on the cross. "It is finished." Not a cry of "it's over, I've been defeated." It's a cry of "I've done it." A satisfaction. What I came to do has been completed. And part of what he came to do was to complete the Old Testament law. The Old Testament, as we call it, points to Jesus. The whole sacrificial system is pointing to the final great sacrifice of Jesus on the altar of the cross itself. He fulfilled the various predictions of the prophets. When he said, "I come the law and the prophets," that's shorthand for the whole of what we call the Old Testament, the scriptures as the Jews had them. That's a shorthand way of saying that. So if Jesus is using that shorthand, what does he mean? The answer is simple enough. What Jesus is saying is that law is fulfilled in him. He's saying that the whole of the Old Testament is pointing to him. He's the one to whom it leads. He completes it. He fills it up. He did everything. He supersedes it, not by getting rid of it, but by explaining and exemplifying what it really means. He doesn't do away with the commandments. He goes beyond them and is able to go beyond the individual instructions set out and their ultimate meaning. But he's referring to the principles behind the laws and not the laws themselves. The very character of God, and remember that Jesus is God, God in human form as he walked this earth, is seen in the principle he puts forward. Jesus says that every part of the law, down to the last punctuation, every iota, every jot and tittle in the AV, every little bit of punctuation in perhaps modern English, is fulfilled to its least detail. Not for anyone to deny the law and to alter it or break it, because the need to go beyond is to go beyond it. Jesus interprets the law. That's what Jesus is saying again and again. You have heard that it was said, but I tell you. He contrasts the understanding of the teachers of the law and what people have heard from them with his own teaching. He goes beyond the commands themselves to what underlines them. He sets his authority against theirs, because he is the completer, the fulfillment of the law. And if you think about it, who wrote the laws? Who caused them to be written? God. And Jesus, of course, is part of the Trinity of the Godhead. So we start with murder. In the Old Testament, that's killing with intent. And in fact, in modern law, murder is with malice aforethought. You planned to kill somebody intentionally and thought it through. Less than that, how dare I try and interpret Jeremy on the point of law. Less than that becomes manslaughter. But what leads to murder? Anger, hatred. It's in the heart that leads, and the mind that leads to acts of murder. And that's what God's judgment is about. By rabbinical teaching, any form of insult, like calling a person by a racial name, which is very current in our modern world, a derogatory term, it was unlawful, and he could be brought before the governing council, the Sanhedrin, for it. But Jesus says that any insult and any derogatory puts you in risk of hellfire. He's going even further. It's not the Sanhedrin you need to worry about. It's God's judgment you need to worry about. It's the place. It refers literally to to Gehenna, which is a place where false gods and idols were worshipped in the Old Testament. And then we come to the act of adultery, which is forbidden in the Ten Commandments. But Jesus says that lusting after the spouse of another means that the act has been committed with intention. In the intention, says one who looks at a woman lustfully has committed adultery in his heart. And the Greek word that we translate does have that meaning of adultery, and it does come under that Jesus teaching on adultery. We're not talking about saying that woman or that man is quite attractive. That's not lusting. But lusting after somebody, and Jesus refers to it in the act of adultery. That's lust. What's the intent in looking upon that person? And I would argue that it doesn't only apply to men looking at women. Women can look at a man lustfully just the same. And it's lust, not just appreciation that somebody is attractive, that is condemned here. And then we come on to divorce. That's quite a controversial issue in our modern world. I'm not sure of the statistic that says how many marriages end in divorce, and it's a It's a fact that's fairly close to me personally at this point. I'm not me personally. My wife and I have just celebrated our golden wedding anniversary, thank the Lord. But somebody close to us we know. The Old Testament permitted divorce. There were all sorts of reasons that a man could divorce his wife. And notice it was that way round. The man could divorce his wife. I believe that one ground was burning his dinner. I've always said that my wife worships me. I get burnt offerings at every meal. That's not entirely true. And given coming from somebody whose culinary ability begins and ends with beans on toast, I maybe shouldn't make a joke like that. But most of us will know what I mean. Divorce was easy. You could just change your mind and issue a certificate of divorce to your wife. It has become easier in this day and age. I'm frightened how quickly the person I refer to has divorced. But we separated 5 months ago and the divorce was finalised. The final certificate of divorce will be issued in a few weeks' time. It's not so long ago, it required an act of parliament to get divorced. This is why only the wealthy ever got divorced. Or if you were Henry VIII, you got your wife beheaded, that's one way of getting a divorce. But marriage is intended to be for life. That's God's plan. I'm quite heartened some years ago listening to some younger members of my staff. Some celebrities were getting married and the news was full of their prenuptial arrangement. Who was going to get what when they divorced? Perhaps if they divorced. And the members of staff were saying, well, it shouldn't be like that. You shouldn't be getting married thinking about when you get divorced. You should be getting... And I'm quite heartened that it was younger people who have... What happened to them if they've ever got married and what happened to them, I've no idea. But I was quite heartened that it was younger people, a younger generation, who were of that opinion that a marriage should be permanent. And then we come to oaths. The ninth commandment, not to bear false witness. The court proceedings. Jesus says that we shouldn't make any oath. We should just say yes or no, and that should be enough. We should be of a good enough character that people just accept that. As Christians, they should know that what we say, we mean to do. What we say will be the truth. Because that's part of our nature. We don't blaspheme. We don't break our word. But then, what about the oath in a court of law? You might guess that Jeremy's made that comment. And I, as a former retail manager, I often found myself in the witness box on a shoplifting case and took an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Is that okay? If Jesus says you shouldn't take oaths? I've taken an oath, as all licensed readers and members of clergy have, of canonical obedience to the Bishop of Chichester and his successors in office, which gets me out of saying, well, that was to Bishop Eric, so I don't have to obey Bishop. No, it's his successors in office. Was that right? Should the church... Well, that was a question that the Christian church faced in its earliest days. Was that okay? And the opinion that we've lived with ever since is yes, it is. When faced with an authority, such as a court, such as the bishop, it's okay to take an oath to tell the truth, to reinforce what Jesus is teaching us and what should be natural to us in our Christian lives. Jesus talks quite vehemently about self-mutilation. Cut off your right hand, gouge out your eye, if that's what leads you into sin. I do not believe that he means that literally. Jesus is, in various places, uses hyperbole, overstatement. Think about a speck in someone else's eye and a beam in yours. Can you really imagine somebody with a beam sticking out of their eye? His famous saying about a camel and the eye of the needle, and no, don't let anyone tell you that the eye of a needle was a strange term for a very narrow gateway into the city of Jerusalem. There is no evidence that any such gateway ever existed. He meant it literally. Try to imagine the largest animal that people in this day would have ever probably seen. They didn't have David Attenborough showing them elephants on television. They'd probably never seen anything bigger than a camel. And the small, tiny eye of a needle. How do you get that through that? You can't. It's not possible. That's what he's teaching. Using overstatement. And I think he's doing that again here. What are the temptations that you face? What are the temptations that I face? How do we avoid them? How do we get away from them? How do we have to, what actions do we have to take to not be tempted? That website, that magazine, that newspaper, whatever. A friend of ours resigned his job because he refused to sign off on a set of books that he realised were, shall we say, not exactly accurate. In fact, fraudulent. Now, he didn't cut off his right hand, so he couldn't sign them. But he did cut off his livelihood. You can imagine if he was in a position to sign off the company's books, he was in a senior post in that company. But he cut that off to avoid the temptation of having to do what the firm were asking him, which he knew was not right, was not proper. Was probably in fact illegal. He refused to know he could get another job. But that's the sort of thing Jesus is referring to. You know, I know, what we need to do to avoid temptation. Is it that group of friends you have to break off relationships with because what they're doing leads you on the wrong path? Whatever. I can't answer for you. You have got to answer for yourself. But that's what Jesus is getting at when he talks about what is about this cutting off, gouging out your eye and cutting out your hand. He's talking about principles. We can't say, well, Jesus never said that was wrong, so I'm okay. Jesus is talking about the principles of our lives, living out what God intends through his laws and through Jesus' teaching. Anger leads to murder. Hatred leads to murder. Scorn, contempt, abuse, insult. What about gossip and bad-mouthing somebody? They're all out for members of Jesus' kingdom. We need to put right our relationships with other Christians, with those in the world about us, and most importantly, with Jesus himself. It may not be easy. As a manager, I was often, unfortunately, needed to conduct disciplinary interviews with members of staff. And before each interview, I did three things. I read the AFAS guidelines. I read the company policy to make sure that I conducted the interview in line with both. And then I prayed to make sure I conducted the interview in line with Jesus' wishes for the people I was dealing with. And I never regarded a disciplinary interview as a step to dismissal, but a step to improving somebody's work performance. Pray before you make the decisions. Pray about the situations you find yourself in that you find tempting. Pray about the temptations you know you face, and then walk in the way that Jesus calls us to walk. Amen.